Welcome everyone to this third session of the Day of the Digital Audiobook. My name is Tom Peters. I'm sort of fulfilling two roles here this afternoon. I'm the coordinator of the OPAL initiative, which is one of the co-sponsors of this Day of the Digital Audiobook along with Library U. And I'm also one of the co-presenters of this particular session along with Lori Bell from the Alliance Library System. So welcome, and before we get started, I'd like to give Lisa Barnhart, who's the coordinator of Library U, a chance to welcome everyone and say hello.
Thanks, Tom. And once again, thanks to you and Lori and Debbie Baskey for everything that you've done today to give us lots of good information. I know this has been exhausting, so you're wearing lots of hats today. Welcome again to everyone. This is our final session for the day. Some of you are probably getting pretty tired, I'm guessing. I am the project coordinator for Library U. And again, I just wanted to give you a welcome from both OPAL and Library U in this, our first initiative as Library U Live. And again, just a reminder for you, we've already given away three playaways today, and we'll be giving away another one at the end of this session. So stick around and we might draw your name.
Thanks, Lisa. If this is the first event you've attended today, I have synchronized browsing turned on at my end. So we'll be going through some HTML pages that are basically sort of beta versions, slides of the beta version of the three new modules that we're working on for Library U, self-paced, web-based learning modules. So you can just sit back and listen, and hopefully we'll provide some good information for you. And if you do have questions or comments, you can type them into the text chat box, which is located in the left center area of the screen. Alt-T is the keystroke command, if you'd prefer to use that to move your cursor into the text chat input box. Simply type in your comment and press return, and it'll go out to everyone in the room. Alternatively, if you have a microphone connected to your PC, you can press and hold your control key and you'll be able to speak using voice over IP, such as I'm doing right now. So like I said, I've got synchronized browsing turned on, and let's get started here. For those of you who have been here for all three sessions, I apologize, but because we are making a recording of this session, I want to try to cover some of this basic welcome information for each session. This is the Day of the Digital Audiobook, and I've predicted that this is also the Year of the Digital Audiobook, so we'll see what happens. This day is the inaugural online event in Library U Live, which provides a blended experience of self-paced and web-based instruction with live online presentations and discussions. Library U Live is a collaborative effort between Library U, which provides free web-based training for librarians and their patrons, and OPAL, which offers a wide array of live online programs for librarians and library users worldwide. Funding for Library U, learning.libraryu.org, has been provided by the Illinois State Library, a division of the Secretary of State and State Librarian, using federal LSTA funds. Library U Reloaded is funded by a Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation training grant awarded to the Illinois State Library. Content development and support of Library U is provided by the Illinois Regional Library System, ILSDA, which stands for the Illinois Library Systems Directors Organization, and the Illinois State Library. OPAL, whose URL is www.opal-online.org, receives generous support from the Alliance Library System in Central Illinois, the Illinois State Library Talking Book and Braille Service, and from the annual membership dues of more than 35 organizational members in three countries on three continents. And if you're wondering what those continents are, they are North America, Europe, and Australia. One goal of the Day of the Digital Audiobook is to introduce the participants in these sessions to three new modules being added to the Library U curriculum about digital audiobooks. These modules are being designed to provide self-paced, web-based instruction for librarians, library staff, and library patrons. As I mentioned, please note that this online session is being recorded and will be added to the OPAL archive soon after the completion of today's live online event. Soon probably means either tonight or tomorrow, if you're wondering. The archive will also be incorporated into the Library U online courses developed for this Day of the Digital Audiobook. If you do experience any technical problems during this session or have procedural questions, please right-click on the tech support person. Her real name is Dawn. Listed there in the participants list in the lower left area of your screen. By right-clicking, you can send what's called a private text chat message to Dawn, and she will get back to you with some advice or instructions. And also, finally, as Lisa mentioned during her welcome, we have been giving away these interesting and cool new PlayAway self-contained digital audiobook devices during this day of the digital audiobook. So later in this session, we will have our final drawing for one of these interesting devices. But you do need to be in your virtual seat in this room at the time that the drawing is made. As I mentioned, myself, Tom Peters, and Lori Bell are going to be the presenters for this session. Hopefully you can see that little digital photograph of us. I can tell you, in all honesty, I'm not wearing a tie right now. I'm here in my own home office in Blue Springs, Missouri, where I started back in 2003, a company called Tap Information Services that provides information type services supporting libraries, consortia, government agencies, publishers, and other information intensive organizations. I've basically been an academic librarian for the last 18 years. I've worked at various universities around the Midwest, plus at the CIC, which is the academic consortium of the Big Ten universities, plus the University of Chicago. And my cohort my co-presenter this afternoon is Lori Bell, and I'll let Lori introduce herself a little bit here. So over to you, Lori. Thanks.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Lori Bell with the Alliance Library System. I work with grants and projects there, and most recently I was director of the Mid-Illinois Talking Book Center, where we've done a lot of different projects with different digital audio book vendors. So welcome, and glad you're here.
Okay, and I think Lori's going to get us started here with talking about some of the advantages and disadvantages of going it alone versus doing it consortially or collaboratively with two or more libraries or other organizations.
Okay, the advantages of doing projects alone or offering digital audiobooks on your own is you have total control if that's what you like. You can decide what books to purchase, the terms of the license agreement. You can call the project or collection whatever you want. You can brand it with your library name. You can do whatever you want for your library. The disadvantages are your library has all the costs, you have all the work, the administration, which, you know, varies from vendor to vendor. You know, NetLibrary doesn't involve any collection development. OverDrive does. You do all the collection development, you do all the marketing, you do all the training and technical support. You get to do everything if you go it alone. Let's talk a little bit about the advantages and disadvantages of doing it consortially. If this is a new service for your library, which it is for most, you're sharing the risk. There's a safety in numbers. There's a shared cost. So if you're not sure how it's going to go over in your library, you're not spending as much money as you probably would alone. With more members, there's more money, so you can more quickly build up a good collection of titles. The work is shared among the members. Some may do collection development, others may do marketing, or maybe you hire a coordinator who does a lot of that. You can share marketing ideas and initiatives, and you do save money, and you may get a better price than going it alone. The disadvantages are you do lose some local control. As I've said several times, with my media mall, the Alliance Libraries have joined. North Suburban administers that. There's a collection committee which decides on the collection. With Unabridged, there are 5 states, and we have an advisory committee. We have a project coordinator that we pay to do the collection development and day-to-day administration. And both of those models have worked very well, in my estimation. With all the work we have to do on a day-to-day basis and all the new services we're constantly offering, it doesn't hurt to give up a little control to offer a new service. And in my experience with both Unabridged and MyMediaMall, the people that are in Unabridged, the case of Tom coordinating the project. He does an excellent job. And with my media mall, with North Suburban administering it and running the governing, that has been excellent too. It allows you to dip your feet into a new service without having to put all the work in all by yourself. Another disadvantage is that the needs of the participating libraries may vary. We're hoping to get some academic libraries involved in My Media Mall. So, and we have really small libraries up to really large libraries. So the needs and interests may vary. Also, if the audiobook services don't offer unlimited use, you know, people may be going in and finding that a book they want is checked out and they need to put their name on the waiting list. The good thing is that in the case of My Media Mall and Unabridged, if there are holds, the people doing collection development see that and automatically order some more copies. So, both with My Media Mall and Net Library, the always available books work very well because surely there's something there that somebody will like if they've had to put a hold on a different book. So any questions about doing it alone or doing it consortially? In the experiences we've had, doing it consortially just makes the most sense because you share the work, you share the costs, you share the risks.
Yeah, Lori, I agree. And I was just thinking that I've been involved in a lot of collaborative projects over the years involving two or more libraries. And one other, I think in some ways this is no different than any other type of collaborative project involving two or more libraries. And I think another trade-off that happens is that if you go it alone, generally you can go at your own time frame too. If you want to get a service up and running as quickly as possible, I guess I would say in general, you probably would be better off going it alone than trying to work with a group of libraries. But if you want to work with a group of libraries, you're going to have more, as you've talked about, you're going to have more, you're going to distribute the risk and the cost and the governance and all the other things across all the libraries, which might be better in the long run. So there's kind of a short-term gain versus a long-term gain dynamic going here as well. I mean, on this slide and within the module, we'll also have links to some of the other consortial initiatives that are out there. I know that a group of libraries in Oregon just brought up a digital audiobook service as a collaborative. New Jersey has a collaborative going. There's lots of them out there. So this is just a sampling, not an exhaustive list of what's out there. Another thing to think about is, do you want to do a pilot project or do you want to launch a service from scratch? The advantages of pilot projects are that there's little risk and possibly little or no cost. You can get some user reaction to the service before diving in. If you want to, you could even have like an in-house pilot project or a small selection of patrons trying the service during the pilot phase. So you really can kind of control what's going on there. The downside to pilot projects is that you do have to spend some money and staff time on the project that may not continue or evolve into a full-blown service. And the other thing is that sometimes with pilot projects, library staff members and patrons may not give their full weight of their consideration of digital audiobooks in the library because they see this as just a temporary kind of pilot project thing. So I've heard good arguments on both sides whether you should, sort of dip your toe in the water first and see how it goes versus plan for a major new service and collection in your library. And you all know much better than I what your particular needs are, what your resources are, and what your sort of organizational culture, what your needs of your community are. But think about whether you want to do a pilot project or begin planning in earnest for a full-blown ongoing program. You may want to, we just try to find some links of some full-blown programs and some that are more kind of pilot projects. Let me try to browse through some of these. I noticed earlier when I was just trying to co-browse by clicking on the link, it would open up a new window on my computer and probably on your screen as well. So I'm going to try to copy and paste these URLs into this embedded browser here. First, let's try going to the Seattle Public Library, which is one of the, I think it's one of the oldest talking book services going right now.
I really like doing pilot projects. It gives you a lot of information for your administration about how things went, what problems there were, what a full-blown service might cost, if people want it or not. And if they don't, it gives you a chance to, get out of that program or service and say, you know, this didn't work, but we didn't waste a lot of money on it either. So in my experience, I really like doing pilots before we do a full-blown project.
You know, the other thing I was just thinking of is that you can brand it other ways too. Like, for example, Lori and I have been involved in some things that we would call field studies, for example, or field tests or beta tests of new services coming out, where you don't call it a pilot project, which might get some people to think that it might turn into a full-blown service. But you don't call it a research project, because then people say, well, what's your control group, and how are you what's your hypothesis and all the rigor of a full-blown research study. If we just call it a field test or a beta test or something like that, which doesn't get people's hopes up too much, and enables you to get some very valuable experiential knowledge with using these various services and technologies. Okay, sorry about that. I don't mean to pick on the folks at the Listen New Jersey project, but when I visited this site at the East Brunswick Public Library, I couldn't really tell whether it was a pilot project or a full-blown service. If you see in the upper right-hand corner of this screen under the banner New at the Library, it says East Brunswick Public Library Cardano is on WBS says to, okay, a pilot project for 17 participating libraries. Now, to me, pilot project means beginning, middle, and end. But then if you sort of browse down through the rest of this, it looks like a full-blown project to me. So that's the one downside, I think, a big downside to pilot projects is you can't really, it gets people confused about, well, what are you doing here? Is this going to continue? Should I invest my time in learning how about this new service? All those kinds of things that we've talked about for the last few minutes. Okay, the next thing we want to spend most of this hour kind of looking a little more in depth at the sort of the major vendors providing digital audiobook content for libraries. And they're in no particular order here. I suppose we should have put them in alphabetical order or something, but they're in no particular order here. But the first one we wanted to cover was Overdrive. And they've got a master collection now that's approaching 6,000 titles. Most, but not all, of their titles are unabridged. One thing that differentiates them from maybe some other digital audiobook suppliers is they are using a wide variety of publishers and suppliers. Last time I counted more than 25 suppliers that they're using. Brilliant seems to be one of their major suppliers. Blackstone Audiobooks, they've recently added some stuff from the BBC audio collections. They're working on some stuff with BBC America. So they just have a lot of different Naxos. They've got a lot of different suppliers. As I mentioned in one of the sessions, my mind is addled now, and I can't remember which one, but or one of the earlier sessions, they've divided up their content into parts, and each part will fit onto one CD if you plan to burn it that way. So it also makes it, you can download the parts individually, or you can download the entire audiobook. So it does offer you some options in terms of how you want to download that particular content. I also mentioned that they've come up with this pretty interesting piece of software called the Overdrive Media Console. It's free software, and it really enables enhanced playback on a computer of this content. They put in things they call media markers about every minute, so that if you want to engage in nonlinear navigation through the audio content, you can go sort of minute by minute. You can jump around. They were, I believe, the first mainstream purveyor of digital audiobooks to include variable speed playback into their Overdrive Media Console. So there's some really nice features in that. Just my opinion, but I think they have a great administrative module. I use it almost on a daily basis, and there's always some things that, you know, I would do differently or suggest that they do. One thing, for example, in the what I would call the author field of their records, they include the author and the narrator. I wish they would break that out so that you could, sometimes people want to search by narrator rather than by the author of the book. The other thing I don't like in that particular field is they just put the first name and the last name together in one field, and so you end up sorting by first name rather than last name. But, you know, other than some minor quibbles like that, I think they have a great administrative module. I've already mentioned the variable speed playback. They are using copy-protected WMA, or Windows Media Audio files. We've pretty much hashed over earlier today the upside and downside to the WMA file format in the format wars, the format file format fiasco we were calling it earlier. I already mentioned the media markers that enable nonlinear navigation. A library, another nice thing is that you can set your own circulation period and the number of audiobooks that individual users can have checked out at any given time. They do provide some integration services with your integrated library service. And the Overdrive Media Council does ask the users if they want to have expired content deleted from their hard drive. So it is sort of aware of what's happening on your, with your circulation period. Their first and primary sales and access method is one copy, one concurrent user, similar to the traditional library book purchase model. But they do offer what they call their maximum access plan, and you can have multiple concurrent users of access to one title. Vicki asked if it's possible to download the Overdrive books onto a DVD. I don't know. I've never tried to burn audio content on a DVD. I don't know. Sorry. Also, as we talked about earlier, I think it was during the Brown Bag Luncheon, they are working on a public access kiosk that you would have within your library that would enable patrons in your library to check out and download digital audiobooks directly to their portable playback device. So they'd come in with their MP3 player, go up to the kiosk, check out the content, connect their player to the kiosk, download the content, and walk away with it. They also provide preview audio snippets that are accessible from the library's OPAC, so you can get a few minutes sampling of these things. I find the usage statistics very useful, and the fact that the various reports that are available can be downloaded and pulled into spreadsheets for further manipulation is nice. They do seem to be fairly consortial friendly, as long as all the member libraries share one collection, one content website, the same circ period, one set of policies and procedures. So you really do have to act as one, is my understanding with Overdrive. They are adding other types of content, such as classical music, old-time radio shows, and motion pictures. Arlene asks, regarding the contest, would patrons need to bring their drivers each time? I haven't seen the beta version of these kiosks yet, but I would imagine that's one of the things they're trying to do, is to make it sort of, you know, plug and download and a walk away kind of thing. You validate that you've got a, you know, probably enter your library card number or something, or swipe your card or whatever, and then choose your item and go away. And as Lori's typed into text chat here, that's what they're designing these kiosks to do, is to sort of sense what type of player you have and use the appropriate transfer mechanism. Some of the downsides or disadvantages of Overdrive, they are relatively expensive compared to some of the other vendors that are in the marketplace right now. As I mentioned, their one copy, one concurrent user is their dominant circulation method. Their content will not play on iPods currently, and not all of their content in their master collection now can be burned to CD. They've started to add some content from suppliers that have said, no, we're not going to allow your users to burn to CD. So it does create some confusion and frustration for users to be able to burn some of the content that they get from a service that you're offering through Overdrive to CD, but not other content. Maybe I should pause here. We're going to be kind of going through the top five, in our opinion, options available to libraries right now. any particular questions about OverDrive before we move on? Is anyone else experiencing audio problems?
Hi, Tom. Tech support, Dawn is, but I don't know if you're in the same weather pattern as we are, but we actually have a tornado watch, and it's pretty violently storming and raining where I'm at near Chicago.
Okay, well, let's continue on. I apologize for those of you who are experiencing some audio difficulties. Sarah asks if these MARC records are from OCLC. As far as I know, well, I shouldn't say. I'm not sure exactly where they come from, Sarah. I don't know, but that would be my guess.
Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about audible.com, and I apologize if I repeat anything I've already talked about before. Audible.com is the granddaddy of digital audiobooks. I think they started offering downloadable digital audiobooks maybe in 2000 or 2001, totally geared at the consumer market. So they've got the largest collection available, over 23,000 titles. In addition to books, they have current radio programs, newspapers, and magazines. They do allow you to burn CDs, and they do play on iPods. To see the types of devices that will play Audible content, you need to go to their website, and it's just audible.com right up there. And there are a number of players that work, but they've got to be Audible ready. And a few years ago, this content did not play on some of the popular players for the visually impaired population, like the Bookport. And that group went to Audible and said, we'd really like to have this content for the Bookport. And so they did work with them to make them Audible ready. There's a lot of disadvantages to Audible and libraries. I would say if you're a consumer and you want you want to download digital audiobooks and magazines, Audible is the best place to go right now. But again, it's much more geared to the consumers than the library market. The books are in a proprietary file format, which again goes back to the player. The player's got to be Audible ready. For libraries, again, we had a pilot project at Mid-Illinois, and then that grew into a regular service with six states that's headed by the Illinois State Library Talking Book and Braille Center. And since Audible doesn't have a management system, what they do is they buy a copy of an audiobook, and then when somebody requests it, the staff at the state library download it to either an Otis or a Creative Mouveau MP3 player. Then they mail it to the person. When the person's done, they mail it back. So even if they have 300 books in the collection, they're limited to the number of checkouts by the number of devices that they have. And there are a number of public libraries that are offering audible.com. An example of this would be Listen Illinois and Listen Ohio. And as I said before, for a while, they were allowing libraries to allow a user to come into the library and download a library title to the user's player, but they seem to be kind of backtracking on that. There's no administrative module that keeps track of circulation. There is no circulation system. For the Loeb Library Project at the Illinois State Library, they have to keep a spreadsheet that says when someone has a book checked out and when it's due, and so when it's available for somebody else. There are four different file types, as Tom mentioned in the first session, and not every playback device handles all four types. And in a way, it's nice that there are four types, because then you can decide what kind of quality you want. If you want the highest quality, you're going to have a great big file. If you don't care about the quality, you'll have a smaller file and it'll download more quickly. but not every player will handle all four file formats. So you kind of got to keep track by your player what, you know, what file size you can do. Audible does not provide statistics. There is, if you're a library that wants to get involved in Audible, you purchase your books and you download them to your computer, and then they sit there until someone comes into your library and asks for that book, and you download it for them on an MP3 player. Although Audible has a website, if you're a library using Audible, you can't offer to your patrons that they can go in and see what you have and download a book. Audible will allow you to give out certificates so a patron can download a book, but then that book is not part of your collection. It just sits there on the computer. With both OverDrive and NetLibrary, the vendor hosts the books, they host the website, and a user can go, once you're signed up with them, a user can go to that site 24/7, choose a book, download it, and then do whatever they want to do with it. Listen on the computer, burn a CD, or listen on a player. But Audible doesn't offer any of that. All they really offer is the collection.
Okay. Are there any questions about Audible? I do want to circle back, and there was some text chat about the these OverDrive kiosks that's evidently being developed. And Eric comments that he's found so far that players that do not require specific drivers often don't function or do not support the protected WMA files of NetLibrary, and I'm assuming also of OverDrive. So a word of caution there. And he's wondering where these drivers are downloaded from, if these kiosks are going to be sort of aware of what's being plugged into them. I frankly just don't know. I don't have the technical expertise, and I don't know enough about their development of their kiosk to be able to answer that. But I think the one thing I'm taking away from today's Day of the Digital Audiobook is that there is a lot of interest in these in-library kiosks that OverDrive is developing, and I imagine other vendors will develop soon. I think that's something we ought to follow up on. And I see that Tech Support Dawn has put in some additional information that she found quickly at the OverDrive site about these kiosks that are being played here. I'm going to quickly browse us into that. And while I do, are there any questions about audible.com before we move on? This is just one person's opinion, but I'm just a little bit confused about what Audible's trying to do. They seem to kind of go back and forth between whether they want to sell to libraries or not. And maybe it's the confusion on my part, or I'm just not getting the right message or something, but I just can't understand what they're trying to do. It does seem to me, though, that their primary interest is in the direct-to-consumer market. The other thing I can put in here is that I did read somewhere that they are planning a whole new division that's going to have college content appropriate for college curricula available through audible.com. So they're kind of going after the college student market, it seems to me, and higher ed market. Okay, the third one we want to just briefly cover here is the NetLibrary Recorded Books initiative. As I recall, it was launched just about a year ago in January of 2005. They've gone their primary sort of way of pricing and providing access is through an annual subscription price. You can provide access to your patrons to the entire master collection. So there really is no local selection that has to be done. That could be, you know, that could be an advantage. It could be a disadvantage depending on how you look at it. The annual subscription price is based upon the total annual circulation statistics for the subscribing library. So that's how they price that. As with OverDrive, what they're vending is copy-protected Windows Media Audio or WMA files. And we've talked throughout the day about, you know, how that's, whoever is at fault, if there is anybody at fault, it's unfortunate that these copy-protected WMA files will not play on the iPod line of portable MP3 players, which is the dominant market share player out there right now. They do use two compression ratios, the lower quality compression ratio and smaller file size they call radio quality, and the higher quality they call CD quality. I wish they'd pick different days because CD also thinks in terms of burning to see with CD. They do offer some preview audio snippets that are available. This is changing. Initially, they didn't really want to work with consortia, but I think they've sort of changed their tune in the past year, and they seem to be open, from what I hear from folks, they seem to be more open to talking to and working with consortia. They do allow multiple concurrent users, and this has been one of my hobby horses for years, is that, to me, one of the natural good things about digital content is you can have more than one person accessing the same title at the same time. It's a real step above and beyond the typical print-based collection. They are allowing that, and they set an annual cap on CERCs when you enter an agreement with them, and they call it a very generous cap. I guess time will tell whether that's true or not. It does seem to be pretty easy to integrate these digital audiobooks into your existing NetLibrary ebook service if you do have one. They do provide MARC records. So those are some of the advantages of NetLibrary. Some of the disadvantages is they don't break down their large audio files into sections. So if you're talking about some really long download times to download, for example, a CD quality book over a 56K dial access connection. I mean, we're talking about maybe 6 to 8 hours to do that, depending upon the size and length of the book. So think about that. They don't allow burning to CDs. Evidently, users must set up a free personal account within NetLibrary before they can access the collection. And as I mentioned in one of the sessions earlier today, only their CD quality compression files can be transferred to portable playback devices. And as Eric just typed in as an aside in the text chat, the low quality, radio quality file format is, in his opinion, rather poor quality, and they don't recommend it to their patrons to use. It is possible to go beyond the annual circulation cap. Let's say that your fiscal year or your contract year ends at the end of June, and mid-May, and you've run out of your negotiated number of circulations. You can sort of buy more, but you do have to buy them. And as with the OverDrive content, currently it will not play on iPod. So these are some of the advantages and disadvantages of the NetLibrary Recorded Books digital audiobook service. I haven't looked carefully at what sort of who's buying this particular service, but I would imagine some of the early adopters were already NetLibrary ebook customers, and they just saw this as like a new format to add to their existing ebook service. But that's just my assumption here. Any questions or comments about NetLibrary Recorded Books? I know we do have some people in here who are already customers of this service, so any feedback you can provide would be appreciated. Thanks. It looks like we lost Lori for a minute here, so I guess I'm doing solo here now. Sally puts in that she doesn't think allowing to burning the CDs is at a disadvantage because it would encourage the user to borrow again. So sort of getting your usage stats up, yeah, not allowing to burning the CDs is a good thing. I did hear, though, I don't know if there's anybody here from the Denver Public Library, but I heard that the Denver Public Library conducted a user survey of their users of their downloadable digital audiobook service through OverDrive. And one thing that surprised me, and I just heard this anecdotally, so I don't have the study in front of me, but when they asked people how they were primarily listening to this content, whether it was on their computers, on a portable playback device, or burned a CD and listened to it, it was pretty much split three ways, you know, about 33% each. Which surprised me because I thought the hassle of burning 10, 12 CDs would discourage a lot of people. But as Eric just typed in here, because commuters and people who travel in cars might prefer to have CDs, maybe that's one reason why burning to CD would be a desirable feature for some of your users. Any other comments or questions about NetLibrary Recorded Books? I can see that little green AB to the left of people's names indicates that they're typing, so I'll hold off here for a second before we move forward. Kathy's comment about that audiobook clubs are starting to proliferate, where one person buys a digital copy and burns CDs for others, and other types of things like that. Yeah, you know, I guess there's always going to be, you set up any kind of system and people are going to try to hack it or abuse it in some way. And, you know, whether you're selling sauerkraut in a can or whatever, you're going to have a certain amount of damage and loss getting your product from the point of manufacture to the point of use. And I'm not in this business. I'm just a librarian. I'm not a provider here, but I guess there's sort of acceptable risks and acceptable loss rates that the publishers and the copyright holders and the vendors can, and they must try to monitor it in some ways and see what's going on here. Charlie asks if there's any library that's allowing patrons to download at the library. I don't know here. Julie asked the question about copyright, and this kind of gets back to Kathy's comment about buying and burning 12 editions. Arlene texts in that they've just committed to a 2-year contract with NetLibrary. Larry, that's my phone ringing, and I'm actually just getting a voicemail from Lori Bell that they're experiencing, she's in central Illinois, and they're experiencing freezing rain now, and so she cannot get back into the room. So she sends her apologies to everyone that because of weather conditions, she's not able to get in. So even when you have an online conference, sometimes the weather intrudes. Sorry about that. Back to Arlene's comment, she said that they just committed to a 2-year contract, and their goal is to keep the interest up now and promote it, and they've got 73 libraries involved. That marketing is a challenge, and they are creating canned monthly press releases for our libraries, for the local newspapers, among other things. So, yeah, promotion is an ongoing effort, I think. And, you know, we talked earlier today how some libraries are sort of overwhelmed by the demand for this out of the box, but others have to sort of promote a little bit. So it just depends upon your population that you're trying to serve. Connie just pointed out that they are just coming up with NetLibrary, and they're going to allow a downloading at their internet stations in their library, and that they're using Deep Freeze as a way to scrub those terminals clean. Ben points out that there's one thing that hasn't been mentioned here, is that is giving the user one of the free library services, if that's what you want to call them. Go to www.audiobooksforfree.com. It's an English company that has thousands of free books for download, mostly classics at varying rates of speed. The free versions are low quality, and the better ones you pay something like $2. So yeah, we actually have a slide here coming up that talks about some of the other free download services that are available for libraries and patrons. So yeah, that's a whole other route to take. Charlotte Johnson typed in here that Apple just started what they call iTunes U software for colleges. That contains information about basically they're partnering with colleges to provide other types of audio content like recorded lectures, for example. I know at the University of Michigan School of Dentistry, for example, they pretty consistently record in hall lectures and then make them available for podcasting to the other students in the class on campus there. So that's one way to do it. Okay, I hope I didn't miss anybody. Yeah, let's continue on here. And Rin's question there, have you ever heard of LibriVox? Yeah, and actually, that's one of the things I want to talk about when we get to talking about some of the free services. So let's forge ahead here. We're pretty close to the end of our hour here. TumbleBooks is really interesting, and Lori was going to try to cover this, so I can only, you know, I can't do justice to it. But I think what TumbleBooks, I believe they're based in Toronto, Canada. They've sort of gone this totally different route. They're kind of doing streaming audio rather than downloadable audiobooks. They offer unlimited concurrent users. Because they use streaming audio, there's what we call the immediate gratification. They are just start playback almost immediately. You can lease access to as few or as too many titles as you want. They also have this interesting idea of what they call a swappable collection. If you lease access to at least 100 titles a year, you can swap out underperforming titles. So let's say you select a title you think is going to be useful to your and of interest to your readers, but nobody uses it. You can actually swap out that underperforming title with something else from the TumbleBooks Master Collection. Other things that they're doing, we talked about this in one of the earlier sessions, is they're offering dual large print and audiobooks. So you can see the book and hear the book at the same time. And you can even, each user can decide what size font it works best for them. And so that's really interesting as well. They started off as an ebook company for children, and they sort of branched out into the adult market, adult content in the good sense, not triple X content, but just adult content. And I really think that what they're doing is some pretty interesting stuff here. Some of the disadvantages is they're currently only available online. Their master collection is pretty small and it's not growing very quickly. They don't allow any burning to CDs. They don't allow any transferring to portable playback devices. And micromedia flash technology is just not very accessible to print impaired users. So it looks like Lori's rejoined us here. Sorry about that, Lori, but I quickly covered the Tubble Books. Anything you want to add?
Just if people want to try it, they can go to the Mid-Illinois site at the address I put in up there and just click on whatever you want to try, Tumble Book Library, Tumble Talking Books, and you can see what they're like.
Yeah, I just to reiterate what I said, I think what they're doing is very interesting and sort of might be the future of audiobooks as we experience them. But I'm just really worried that their master collection is so small. It's, you know, it's in the low three digits and not growing very quickly. My general thesis is that once we sort of figure out the technology and once our users figure out technology, then it becomes a content race where the vendor that's able to provide the biggest collection of the most compelling content for the end user population is what's likely to win in the long run. Are people seeing the PlayAwaits slide right now? Lisa said I'm not advancing things.
We're good now, Tom.
Okay, we talked about PlayAway quite a bit during the brown bag luncheon, so for those of you who are here for that, I apologize. But again, this is a totally different model than what we're seeing from NetLibrary and OverDrive. These are self-contained digital audiobooks where you buy the device, the playback device, and the content in one package. It's almost like a printed book where you buy paper and glue and ink and the novel or work of nonfiction, whatever it is you're buying, as one package. So think about it almost like a printed book gone digital. It's self-contained, preloaded, very easy to use. Basically, a library would want to do this, would want to circulate both the hardware and the audiobook as this self-contained package. Their master collection is a mix of unabridged and abridged audiobooks. I'm very keen on variable speed playback, and they brought it down to the device level. You can speed it up or slow it down just by hitting a few buttons. They've got a skip back 15 second feature, which is nice, and it even does this when you're restarting the book. If you turn it on and turn it back on, it jumps back 15 seconds, so you say, oh yeah, that's where it was in this novel, and then it continues on, which I think is a nice feature. The end user does not have to have a computer or any kind of computer skills, and the library doesn't have to be loading devices or anything like that. Some of the disadvantages is like with a print collection, you can only have one user at a time. Their master collection is pretty small. Because the device is preloaded, they don't allow you to basically scrub that device clean and reload it with something else. Although there has been some talk that they might do that in the future where you, let's say in 2006, you buy 15 copies of a 2006 bestseller, and by 2008, it's no longer in that demand, so you could maybe send it back or send it to some sort of a reloading center and have it reloaded with the 2008 bestsellers. But that's just, as far as I know, it's just talk at this point. I don't know if Mike Belcito or anybody else from PlayAway is in here, but that's my understanding. And like with anything, you're going to have to store and maintain those physical devices if you go the PlayAway route, because they are physical objects that you, and all the things, the security and things that we talked about over the brown bag luncheon, anytime you're dealing with a physical object in a library as part of your collection, you've got long-time archival issues and security issues and durability issues and all that other fun stuff. Any questions about PlayAway? Okay, last but not least, as some of the text chatters already indicated, there's a whole other route you can go. There's several, many sites that probably that offer free downloadable digital audiobooks. Advantages, the obvious thing, they're free or very inexpensive. It's kind of a no-brainer. There's often no digital rights management to worry about and get in the user's way. Some of these digital audiobooks are human narrated and some of them are computer generated text to speech. This advantage is that most of this stuff is out of copyright works, the classics, things like that. You're probably not going to find legitimate copies of current bestsellers in any of these free sites. Their master collections tend to be pretty small at this point. And I guess as a librarian or as a user, I would have some general concerns about the quality of this product from these free downloadable sites. Some of them are labors of love by people that are, sometimes they're amateur narrators even who are making this narrated content. Just a couple of sites, you know, there are a lot of them here out there, but Project Gutenberg actually has an audiobook section if you want to, you know, Project Gutenberg is probably the granddaddy of digital books out there, started in the early 1970s. There's a Telltale Weekly out there, and LibriVox is an interesting new initiative. I want to go to this site just for, just to show you their slogan or their corporate mantra or their organizational mantra. You see in their banner ad up there, LibriVox, and their slogan is the acoustical liberation of books in the public domain. So in my book, anybody who would have acoustical liberation as their organizational goal at least deserves a look. And a listen, I should say, too. And to wind up this entire, this session and this entire day of the digital audiobook before we give away the final play away here, I just want to raise two potential what are typically called disruptive technologies. These are technological developments or innovations that could upset an entire industry. And even though the digital audiobook industry is fairly new, fairly recent, fairly young, I think we can even see some potential disruptive technologies out there. I won't go over this Wikipedia definition of a disruptive technology. You can read it at your leisure or come back and use the self-paced modules when they're ready here in a week or so. But two things that I see that are potentially disruptive, this whole thing we've been talking about today. One is streaming technology. You know, now we think about being online most of the day, but not all the day, and some places, but not all places. But if we get to the stage, and I think we're headed that direction, where most library users are connected to the internet most of the time, most of their waking hours, why would they bother with the time and hassle of downloading content? They would just stream it. So in some ways, I think maybe TumbleBooks is a little more visionary in thinking about, well, let's just stream it rather than go through all the rigmarole of downloading the digital audiobooks. And the other thing that, if you know me, I've been keen on for years is the potential for text-to-speech software. If you've ever experienced this, it probably sounds very computerese, very tinny, very unnatural kind of voice. But if you go out to some of the research sites that are out there, it is amazing what kind of leaps and bounds text-to-speech software has made in the past few years. It's to the point now where I cannot tell the difference between a text-to-speech generated reading of a digital text and a naturally human narrated voice. And if this happens, I think this really could marginalize this human narrated digital audiobooks that we all know and love now. You know, you can start to say things where you start to code text where the different voices of the characters would be read artificially in different text-to-speech voices. So you would really get some character nuances. We've also heard, Lori just found something that was emotional text-to-speech, where I guess you could say you could have like a weepy voice or a laughing voice or an angry voice, all done artificially. And so I really think that when this happens, suddenly every ebook will become a digital audiobook, and you won't have to worry about whether it's been narrated or not and recorded or not and time delays and all that kind of stuff. You'll just do it right at the point of use. You'll make it an audiobook using this text-to-speech software. I don't know what kind of timeline we're looking at here, but I really think that when this happens, the economics of creating human-narrated books will basically marginalize. It won't go away, but it will probably marginalize it.
Yeah, there is software out there where you can plop a chunk of text in, and within a few minutes, you have an MP3 file of the synthetic, whatever synthetic voice that you have chosen.
There's one company that has developed a wide variety of voices, and one of them is a Valley Girl voice, and it's a lot of fun to type in text and have the Valley, that might be typical Valley Girl speak, and then put in some other sort of text that you know you probably never hear a Valley Girl speak, and it will speak to you in that particular dialect, I guess you'd call it.
Tom, can I just interrupt here? And for those who maybe have other obligations, since we were supposed to be done at 3 o'clock, I just wanted to go ahead and thank everybody and also do our random drawing for the last play away before everybody gets out of the room here. So if you can give me a number between 1 and 112 while you continue to ask questions, I'll check out who that might be.
77.
Okay, is Amy Richard from the Bloomington Public Library here? I think she was here earlier, but we'll try another number. So, Tom, give me a different number.
44.
Okay, how about Kelly Ireland, then, from the Southfield Public Library?
Maybe the third time's the charm. Let's go with a small number, 9.
Is Katie Boyes here from the Flathead County Library? Okay, this time I'm just going to choose from the people who are in the room here. So give me a number and I'll count down.
Are there any final questions while we're trying to give away this final play away? I want to thank everybody. For some of you have been here for all the sessions. That's great. Some of you came in for just one or a couple. That's fine too. And like I said, these are all being recorded and we'll get them up into the archive as soon as possible. How about 21?
Okay, it would be Connie, and I think she's the only Connie in here. So, Connie, are you actually here? Wonderful. You are going to get a play away. I'm going to type in my email address, and you just contact me, and I'll put you in touch with Mike Belcito. Thanks again to everybody who was here, and thank you so much for making this a great day. It's been a long day for everyone, of course, primarily for Tom and Lori, but we thank them very much for everything they've done. And if you need to get in touch with me or any of the people who have presented, you can get all of our information from the text chat. Or as tech support is saying, remember that we are going to have a follow-up Q&A session on February the 28th from 1 o'clock to 2:30 p.m. in this room, and we'll send you information about that also. Thanks again.